comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, folks, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm delighted you are here at talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. We're here because you have a right to know. Because you have a right to know, we publish something called the K-Files each week. It is our free weekly newsletter, and I hope you are getting it. If you're not, well, why not? It's free. There's no reason not to be getting it. All you have to do to make sure you're getting it is to go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Now, when you get over to my website, look right in the middle of your screen, and you will see a link that says K-Files. So you click that. It asks you a very, very difficult battery of questions. Actually, just one. It asks for your email address. And then it will automatically send you a confirmation link. So if it's really you subscribing, not someone just playing a joke, see, if they're just playing a joke, and it sends a confirmation email to this address that they jokingly put in. The person gets that and they say, I didn't subscribe to that. I don't know. And they just delete it. Well, then we never send them a K-Files. But when you get that, it's got a link there for you to click and activate your subscription, indicating that you really did subscribe and it wasn't just a joke. And then you start getting the K-Files free, absolutely free. Now, that's important. But it's also important to know you can unsubscribe if you so desire. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. And we don't sell our list of names and email addresses. We don't rent them out. We don't lease them out. We don't let people borrow them. It's just for the K-Files. That's all. And then, you know, sometimes important things come up that we think as many people as we can possibly tell, we want to tell them really important things, like if the site gets hacked and we're operating off of an alternate web host, alternate site, well, we want to immediately tell you, and does that happen often? No, it doesn't, but has it happened? Yes, it has. We want to be able to immediately tell you so that you can get to where the show is for that night. And, you know, just any kind of little emergencies that come up or breaking news, things like that, doesn't happen every day, doesn't even happen every week. But when it happens, we want you to know. Well, if you're a subscriber to the K-Files, that's one of the lists that we send that sort of stuff to, as we have done this week. So be sure you subscribe if you haven't. Hey, if you're not a member yet, you really, really ought to consider doing that. Now, it is the whopping sum of 23 cents a day to join our community of members. 23 cents a day. Now, for that 23 cents a day, here's what you get. You get to watch the show. You get to, if you miss it live, you get to watch it for the next 24 hours. It's available. You have the archives, which we call K-Pods. You have forums. You've got your own profile, own blog, own photo gallery, the video galaxy, lots of stuff. 23 cents a day. You got to join tonight. We'll be back right after this. I tell you what, you talk about a mad scramble. This was a mad scramble. And let me explain to you why, and you will appreciate so much our guest this evening. The guest we have scheduled for this evening, for some reason, is not reachable at either of the telephone numbers that I have. We've been trying since before the show to get in touch with him. So I don't know what's happened. We will try to find out. Hopefully everything's okay. My guest for tomorrow evening, when I realized that we were not going to be able to get our guest this evening, we got in touch with the guest for tomorrow evening and explained the situation. I said, look, you know, I don't know what's happened. Is it possible for you to come on tonight? And he said, sure. So, Paul Dale Roberts, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Kevin, I'm glad to be here. So I think we got a lot to talk about.
Oh, we do, and this must be the universe conspiring to get you on, because perhaps this is information that's so important that we need to go ahead and get it out there tonight. Let me begin. Yeah, a lot of our audience already knows you. They've seen you on television, some of our audience, because we're in countries all around the world, over 140 countries, some of our audience may not be familiar with you. So just from memory, because, normally, folks, I have notes made of things that I'm going to bring up during the show and things I'm going to ask about. Well, that's all out the window for tonight. So we are operating, flying by the seat of our pants here tonight. But just from my memory, you were in the Army in the 1970s. I believe that was from 73 to 76. Is that right?
Right. 73, 76. I was in the Army. I went in as a military policeman. And when I got over to Germany, they had a major drug problem. So I got to work with CID, Criminal Investigation Division, with the drug suppression team, and travel throughout Germany buying drugs and testifying at Article 32s and court-martials. So that's basically what I did. I was working undercover narcotics. And then 79, I went back into the service, into the Army, and I was military intelligence, 97 Bravo, and I was with the Photo Interpretation Center in Korea. And that's where I learned that the military knew something about UFOs. And when I saw six photographs came in, and on the back of the photographs, it said intelligent movement. And each photograph represented a video footage from our reconnaissance satellites.
Now, that's very telling. It said on the back of these photographs that they sent to you, I suppose, for analysis, intelligent movement. So, someone had already seen the videos, had already noted that there appears to be some sort of intelligent something driving this thing, and have noted that on the photograph. Now, we'll get back to that. When you left the Army, your career has been very interesting. You've been a professional dancer. At one point, you held a world record for the longest time dancing. Hours.
I danced 205 hours disco dancing. So that's when disco was the craze. And when disco died and people were wearing T-shirts that said disco sucks, I knew it was over with.
You've appeared as a dancer in some movies as well, right?
Right, Roller Boogie and Skate Town USA. Mm-hmm. And I danced with Jeff Kutosh's Dancing Machine, and we were actually the first number to share. And that's when she went solo in 1979.
Okay. Now, in addition to that, I mean, here, you know, I know sometimes people think, well, now, wait a minute. You know, how do you go from being, you know, this military spook to being a disco dancer? But, the real story here is, folks, nobody is single-dimensional. Everybody you know is more than what you think they are. And so But you've also founded a company that is into promotion for comic books and for animations, right?
Exactly. And I actually got into disco dancing by accident, because when I was working undercover narcotics, I used to have to hang out at the discotheques in Germany. Mm-hmm. And so I would watch these people dancing, and I caught on to the steps. And before I knew it, I was a good dancer. So when I got out in 76, my very first job I landed, and I needed a job, was with Arthur Murray's Dance Studios.
Very cool. Trained by accident.
Just by accident, yeah. And just like I got into paranormal investigating by accident. And how I got into that is, I always thought I lived in a haunted house. And so at the age of 8, I started reading a lot of paranormal books. And I, later on in life, I was reading Brad Steiger, Eric von Däniken, and I became well-versed in the paranormal. And I started dating a girl who was a ghost hunter. And she said, hey, why don't you tag along? You know a lot about the paranormal, and write an article. And I've always been a freelance journalist, and I've been published in National Geographic, Traveler, and all kinds of various magazines and stuff like that. And so the very first story I wrote for HPI, Haunted Paranormal Investigations International, was published in 2 British magazines and 14 ghost websites. And before I knew it, I had a career in paranormal investigating.
Well, there you go. Well, it's just some of those things that are meant to be. You know, I got into radio broadcasting and into doing this show by accident. It was because of a blizzard. And this blizzard was long-term. I was in Kosovo. We were absolutely freezing. We had no electricity. So you get home at the end of the day. You get home. The building is cold. You climb steps to get up to your apartment. You light a candle. There's no way to cook. There's no way to heat. You don't even have running water because there's no electricity for the city water pumps. It's miserable. And so after, you know, several nights of this kind of existence, you know, there's no radio, no television, because no electricity. I brought a laptop computer home from work. Now, we did have generators at work, so I could charge it up. And after a couple of nights of playing pinball, I was bored. And so I just decided to talk to the computer as if that was a friend of mine, and just talk about things I was interested in that you didn't talk about down at police headquarters, okay? And so I talked about UFOs. I talked about ghosts, things like that. And I just recorded it into the computer. And when I got through talking, I would listen to it until I went to sleep. That's how this show started, just by accident.
Amazing.
That's how it started, just by accident.
Fate has strange ways.
That's true. That's true. Now, something has been going on here that's related to UFOs, and it's related to your writing. And I want to sort of, we've dealt with it here on the show, but people are tonight going to get the story behind the story. They're going to get the story behind the scenes. I read an article that you wrote, I think it was at the end of not last week, but the week previous. I think it was like Thursday or Friday, 2 weeks ago. And this article was about a command sergeant major by the name of James Norton. And it laid out the basics of his story, that his story was substantially the same as the story of John Vasquez, who has been a guest on this show several times. And Command Sergeant Major Norton was saying that this battle that John Vasquez claims took place in 1977 at Fort Benning between UFOs and the U.S. Army, according to Command Sergeant Major James Norton, this battle did take place. He was there. He was a witness. He got injured. And he was stepping forward to say, yes, it's true. It happened. It's real. And so I got in touch with you. And interestingly, as soon as you answered the phone and introduced yourself, you said, hi, this is Paul. I said, Paul Dale Roberts, this is Kevin Smith at the Kevin Smith Show. And you said, what? Do you remember?
Yes, yes.
What did you say?
I said, I know what you want. I said, I bet you want the phone number to Command Sergeant Major James Norton.
Exactly right. So you gave me the number, and I called him. We had a nice chat, and I scheduled him to be on the show, and he has now been on the show. And that show, it's rare because that one I put up on YouTube. It's available on YouTube. People can watch it and hear it. I don't do that too often. Now, the story behind the story. I'm going to give you pieces of the story behind the story, and then you have some pieces of the story behind the story.
Right. I can tell you how it first started off, because John Vasquez contacted me and wanted to put his story out through an interview. He already had the story out in a book called Incident at Fort Benning.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted to get the story out where he can reach out to other people and say, hey, you know, if you were there in September 1977 at Fort Benning, step up to the plate and tell us. You know, don't let me be the lone ranger to this. You know, I want other people to come forth and talk about what happened when the military had a skirmish with UFOs. So I said, yeah, John, you know, I'll do this interview. I'll get it out there. And I got it out there, and I got calls from people who wanted to stay anonymous, but they were backing up his story and say, yeah, we were there in September 1977, and we did see UFOs. And there was like 1,300 to 1,500 troops. And the story is just absolutely amazing, because at some point in time, the UFOs went over this one battalion, and they all just were like, I guess they were partially paralyzed or something, and then they all fell over. And as the story went out, some of these soldiers actually were abducted, and some of these soldiers went through hypnosis, and there was medical experiments done on them and everything else. And there was one person who really stepped up to the plate, and that was Command Sergeant Major James Norton. And I don't know if you want to continue on with this or you want me to continue on.
No,
because you
no.
know the story too, and I know the story, but I got some other things to add in there, and that's the situation with Ocelot. And Ocelot is a person who wants to remain anonymous, but he was going to step to the plate if everything was kosher with Command Sergeant Major James Norton, and I'll explain that in a few minutes.
Okay. So I got in touch with Command Sergeant Major James Norton, and just to make this easier, I'm either just going to call him Jim or CSM Norton, because Command Sergeant Major James Norton is a paragraph, okay? So I got in touch with him, and after we talked and he told me his story, this is just a private conversation between him and me, and well, him, me, and whoever had his phone tapped. So I get in touch with him. He tells me his story, and I said, are you sure that you really, I mean, have you thought about the consequences that could befall you for going public with this? He said, yes, I have. I said, are you sure that you want to go ahead with this? I said, now I know that the article is out there, but when you come on my show, you're going to be speaking to over 140 countries. Are you sure you want to step up and do this? And he said, yes. I said, you're not afraid of the consequences? He said, not at all. He said, you know, it's been long enough, and he said, this is something that the people need to know. They need to know what happened and that it's true. And I said, well, okay then, let's do the show, and we scheduled it. So I think almost everyone in the audience tonight probably remembers that show. And if you weren't here for the show when it was live, you've probably seen it over at YouTube. That was a blockbuster show. There's no question about that. He told us fantastic things that some people might have difficulty buying. But he said, look, I was injured in this. And I have the medical records and the photographs to prove it. And, you know, plus, you know, he wasn't selling a book. He wasn't trying to make any money off of anything. Seemed to me to be very, very genuine about everything he had to say. And he absolutely knocked the ball out of the ballpark during that show. Now, I had two or three people, Paul, that said to me the next day, you ought to call him and see how he's doing. I said, no, I'm going to give it a day or two, and then I'll call and just check his pulse and see, you know, what happens. Well, I didn't call for, I guess, what, 3 days, 4 days?
Right.
And then I got a call. And, no, that's not correct. I was talking with you on the telephone, and, you mentioned to me that nobody had been able to get in touch with him. So I'll let you take it up from there.
Okay. Well, it sounds good. I'll take it from here. Okay. So Command Sergeant Major Norton, John Vasquez says, okay, I have his phone number. He's expecting your phone call. So I called him. And Command Sergeant Major James Norton just completely knocked me off my chair when he told me he was active military. And he's at Fort McKellen, Alabama. And he told me he, in September 1977, he was at Fort Benning, Georgia. And he says that everything that John Vasquez says is true. And he says he witnessed it, he knew about it, he saw it. He felt like possibly he was abducted because there was some missing time involved. And he says he can prove it because he actually has the actual, some debris from a crash UFO. He said that, I believe he told me that two UFOs crashed, two military helicopters crashed.
Okay, we have to step away for break, and we'll be right back after this, more with my guest, Paul Dale Roberts. Back from break, and for whatever reason, I just failed to push the button to turn the mic on. Okay, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted that you're here. My guest this evening, Paul Dale Roberts. Paul, we had to cut you off in mid-sentence as we went to break. So just pick up where you were, and the floor is yours.
Okay. Anyway, like I said, John Vasquez contacted me, and he said, I got this person who was actually there September 1977. His name is Command Sergeant Major James Norton. Here's his phone number. Give him a call. He's ready to step up to the plate and talk about what happened. So I called Command Sergeant Major James Norton, found out he was active military, so I almost fell out of my chair when he told me that. And he told me, yeah, Paul, I was there September 1977. I was at Fort Benning. I was a buck sergeant. I was an E-5. I witnessed a skirmish of the military fighting these UFOs. These UFOs, they were like in the shape of globes. I believe, if I'm right, was two military helicopters that crashed and two UFOs were shot down with lasers. And he was, I guess he was part of the cleanup detail because he picked up a piece of metal and he said he kept that metal, and on that metal was hieroglyphics similar to in Roswell, and that you can bend it and it go back to its original shape. You couldn't cut it. He tried to cut it with a hacksaw and was unable to, and he tried to burn it and he couldn't burn it, and he said he had it buried in his backyard at Fort McKellen, Alabama, and there he is, an active command sergeant major. And I was totally amazed with the story, and I said, you know, I said, Norton, I said, are you sure you want this story out? He goes, yeah, I'm really sick and tired of the military, the government, doing these cover-ups. And they are very well are aware of UFOs. They know about UFOs, and he says, the military knows that UFOs have been around since the beginning of time. And I said, well, what an amazing story. I said, are you willing to actually take this debris and let someone actually analyze it, a professional? And he says, yes. He says, I'm ready for it. He goes, I'm ready to unbury it and bring it out to the public. And I said, wow, this is amazing. So when I put the article out there, I got contacted by several people. I got contacted by you. I got contacted by Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake, because they wanted to go over there and actually do a documentary on it. I got contacted by Robert Winter of the Winter Group, and which is made of ufologists who are scientists and former police officers. And Robert Winter was, he's ready to get his ticket to Alabama and head out on Friday. And then all of a sudden, Command Sergeant Major James Norton sort of disappeared on Facebook. It was just like he jumped off the face of the earth. There was no nothing written by him on Facebook. It's almost like he just ceased to exist.
He had been posting things on Facebook on a rather daily basis up till then, hadn't he?
Right, he was, yeah. And I made several phone calls to him, and he wasn't returning my phone calls. So I thought, hey, something really weird is going on. And so finally, I just placed on his Facebook page, on his wall, James, where are you? And that's when James said that he was detained by the military police, that the NSA, National Security Agency, would love to talk to him, and that he needs to keep his mouth shut.
Okay, now let me jump in. Let me jump in right there. Because you had found out that he wasn't answering his telephone or returning his calls. So you told me about that. After we hung up, I called John Vasquez and asked him if he had heard from him. And he said no, he had not, and that he was not returning his calls. He said, you know, I just get the voicemail, and he's not returning my calls. I said, okay, well, I'm going to check and see if he'll return my call. So I called, and he did not answer. I left a message, and then this is fairly early in the morning, a couple of days ago, and didn't hear from him. So then about, at about 11 o'clock in the morning, 10:30, 11 o'clock, I started sending out a notice to all of our subscribers to our newsletter, the K-Files. And it simply apprised them of the situation. Now, here is why. This is part of the story behind the story. I mean, what you're hearing is the story behind the story as well, folks. But why I wanted to send this out as quickly as possible to alert people that He's not answering his phone. We don't know what the situation is. And the notice said, you know, there's several possibilities. Maybe he's been detained, or maybe he's ill and in the hospital away from his telephone, or maybe he just took a vacation. We don't know. But I want everybody to know that right now he's not answering his phone. Now, the story behind that story, last year, a very important scientist, the number two man in the Bulgarian version of NASA, by the name of Dr. Filipov, went public with a story that was printed in the newspapers in Bulgaria and then instantly hit the world press. He went public with the story that, number one, extraterrestrials are real. Number two, they are here. Number three, we are in contact with them. But there was a fourth thing in that first article that came out. He said that there had been a press conference at which several of the extraterrestrials were present and answered questions, which you and I and the rest of the world had never heard about. So whatever press was there kept it quiet. Nobody else ever told us about this press conference. Nobody reported on it. But Filipov said that, and it made it into that article. So we got in touch with him. As soon as that article was out, we got in touch with him, which means within 3 or 4 hours after the article was published, we were in touch with him by telephone. My associate host called him, talked with him, told him who we were and that we wanted an interview, and asked him, did you actually say these things? And he said, yes. And my host said, well, aren't you afraid to be saying these things? And his statement to my associate host, Jerry Wills, was, I am the top astrophysicist, top space scientist in my country. And it's my duty to tell the people the truth. So we asked, could we have an interview? And he said, yes. And he said, and if you will come here, I will show you what our evidence is and what we know. So we made arrangements, quickly made arrangements to go to Bulgaria. And overnight, Dr. Filipov disappeared. He disappeared for 10 days. When he reappeared, he was quite obviously suffering from the effects of sleep deprivation. When he reappeared, he spoke to a Croatian television news crew that had come to Sofia, Bulgaria, to interview him. And they kept pressing him about, are you in touch with the extraterrestrials? And his answer to them was, that is the information that if I tell you, they will kill me. So he went from being excited and ready to go and saying, yes, it's real, to saying, if I talk about that, they're going to kill me. So that was very much in my mind once Jim Norton disappeared, as far as we were concerned, as far as you, me, John Vasquez, and other people trying to call him, trying to get him on email and Facebook, and nobody's getting any response. The Filipov situation immediately came to mind. And I wanted to put as much light on that situation, on Command Sergeant Major James Norton. I wanted to put as much light on him as I could, as quickly as I could, because there's one thing cockroaches hate, and that's light. They don't wish to be exposed. They don't want to be doing their dirty deeds, whatever it is, out in the light. And so I wanted to put as much attention and light on that as possible. So I'm about halfway through our mailing list in terms of sending this out. I'm about halfway through the K-Files mailing list, and the telephone rings. And guess who it is? Command Sergeant Major James Norton. This, I went back and checked. This call came in at 12:17 his time. Okay? 12:17, 17 minutes after noon. So, I talked with him. I said, are you okay? Yeah. I said, well, we've been worried about you. We were afraid maybe you'd been detained or something. And he sort of chuckled. You've talked with him. You know that little chuckle he's got. And he says, no, I haven't been arrested or nothing like that. He said, they don't have anything to arrest me for. He said, I've just been very busy, with, talking with some attorneys and making sure that I am legally covered every which way I go before I press forward with this. And he said, I've just been so busy, I haven't had time to answer calls or emails. I said, well, okay, we're glad you're okay. And, we were concerned. So then I put out that information. I emailed that to all the same people who had gotten that first bulletin. So that's just after noon, and that night, which would be what, last night, you got an email?
Right.
And the email you got from him was at 10:54 p.m., and it told quite a different story than what I heard at noon. So tell us
exactly.
What he said. He went out to the base, out to Fort Benning, and what happened?
That he was detained by military policemen, and apparently, I guess he was interrogated, and they told him that the NSA, National Security Agency, would love to talk to him, and then they told him to shut his mouth.
Okay, and there's some additional details in that email, because you sent me a copy of that on my Facebook. In that email, he says that they said that the base commander wanted to speak with him, and they took him to the base commander.
Exactly, yeah.
And they confiscated his telephone.
Yeah, his cell phone, yes.
So the confiscated
didn't they also too confiscate something else, if I remember right?
That's all I remember.
Did they look in his car or something?
Well, in that email you sent me, it didn't say that. So,
okay, okay.
Unless he sent you another email with that information,
no,
I don't know.
No,
okay, so they...
Yeah, they confiscated his cell phone for sure.
Okay, so after that, after I read that, I called someone else and asked them to do something. And I'll tell you about that, folks, when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm constantly having to look at the controls here because weird stuff is happening, folks. I'll just tell you that. That time the microphone was on, but it wasn't registering when I spoke. It is now. Okay, so Paul, I was telling what I did. Now, I'm not going to name any names, and even if you know any of the names, I don't want you to name them. I contacted several people and asked them to call Command Sergeant Major James Norton's telephone and just see if they could get through to him. At this point, we know that he's been detained, but because he sent an email, we know they let him go. They've taken his telephone. We don't know if they gave it back. And so I just wanted to check and see. And I called several people, asked them to call his telephone number and then report back to me the results. Now, the reason I did that is because I knew that, if I called, my telephone numbers are already marked. They've got me on a list already. And so if they happened to have his telephone, if they happened to again have him in custody, because we have not heard from him since that email he sent you, it could make life more difficult on him for me to call. So I had other people call. And what was reported to me by one person was, well, the first time I called the number, I got a recording saying this number has been temporarily disconnected. So he said, I called again. But this time, I got his voicemail, James Norton's voicemail. So it got through. But nobody was able to get through to him in that little experiment. Now, I don't know, have you tried since that time, have you tried to call him and see if you could get through?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, my team has tried, and we cannot get through to him. And these telephone numbers are not telephone numbers that would have been previously earmarked by anybody that's watching James Norton.
Right.
So, now, folks, I hope you're getting this story, but I hope what you're also seeing is that if you think I'm sitting around all day with my feet on the desk, or that Paul Dale Roberts is sitting around with his feet on the desk, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes on with every story and with every guest we bring on. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes getting ready for a show, and then in this case following up after we've done the show. Where we sit right now, as far as I understand, Paul, where this story sits is that sometime after he talked with me around noon that day, which was yesterday, afternoon yesterday, 17 minutes after noon, he talked with me on the telephone. He said, everything's okay. At some point after that, he went out to Fort Benning. He went on to the base. He was detained by military police, taken to the base commander's office, interrogated, intimidated, or they tried to intimidate by saying the NSA wants to talk with you. Well, you know, look, hey, if the NSA wants to talk with you, just come on, guys, get in your car and come on over. And, you know, let's have some coffee and we'll talk. Just, you know, and that's why I think that's just intimidation.
Right.
It's kind of like the schoolyard bully that says he's going to beat you up. Well, if you're going to do it, get on with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know? So I think that's probably just an attempt at intimidation. They take his telephone. They tell him, you better shut up. You better quit talking about this. And by the way, the NSA really wants to talk to you. Okay. At almost 11 o'clock. So we're now right at 11 hours after I've talked to him. He sends you an email. Apparently he's back home or somewhere where he's got email access, and he sends you an email, tells you this story, and now, again, no email responses from him, no telephone responses from him, and we're not sure what's going on. Now, I can tell you this, that my American government audience tonight is sky high. The people on government computers that are monitoring what we're doing here are sky high. They want to make sure that they protect the American public from this nuisance and this awful threat that this show represents. Now, the awful threat that we represent is no BS, not intimidated. The story is the story, and even though not recognized by some people in our government, we do still have a constitution, and no matter what is done to the people who tell this story, like Command Sergeant Major James Norton, are the people who make it possible, like you and me, no matter what is done, understand, those of you who have nefarious designs upon any of us, the spotlight of the world is on you. And whatever you do, you have to do it out in the spotlight. You can't get away with your nasty, dirty, cockroach deeds on this one. Can't stop you from doing it, but I can stop you from doing it in secret. The world is watching.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, and here's another thing, too, Kevin. There was another guy, he calls himself the Ocelot. And Ocelot says that he was there at Fort Benning in 1977, September 1977, and he witnessed everything. And he says everything that John Vasquez says is true. And somehow, I guess he read my article, but he got wind of the fact that Command Sergeant Major James Norton was going to step to the plate and everything else. And he says, well, if he does, and everything is proven, he goes, I'm going to step to the plate, and I'm going to go ahead and reveal who I am. And I said, well, that's great. Well, anyway, 5 o'clock this morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, he said that he was walking out to his car, and that there was 5 black sedans, and he said, he described them as Chrysler 300s. And he said that these men in the car, he thought either they were government or military, and they were all wearing sunglasses. And as soon as he stepped out to his car, they all sped away, but they were staring at him, like a form of intimidation. And I can't verify if his story is true, but he sounded like he was pretty scared. So, and he says, you know, whatever the situation is with Norton, he's not going to get himself involved now.
Well, to Ocelot, I would say this. Safety is not in knuckling under. Safety is in numbers of people telling the truth and shining the light. Now, you know, you're former military intelligence. Did you ever think that what you were doing would ever be used against the American people? Or did you think what you were doing was for the American people? We'll have to get that answer when we come back from break. All right? We'll pick up right there when we come back. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back. You are listening to the Kevin Smith Show. My guests this evening, Paul Dale Roberts. My sympathy for those of you who missed the first hour, because you missed way more than you can afford to miss. So my sympathy for whatever it is that kept you from being here. Wish you had been here, but we're delighted you're here now. Welcome aboard. And Paul Dale Roberts, I asked a question before we went to break. I said, you used to be military intelligence. And I want to elaborate on the question a little bit. I said, did you ever think that what you were doing was working against the American people or working for? So let me add some clarification to what I mean, and then I'll let you answer. What I mean is, did you get up in the morning and say, oh, wow, let me see what I can do to violate the constitutional rights of America? Did you ever do that?
No, never did that, Kevin. Can you hear me? Because I went on my Bluetooth on my car, so so I can hear you better.
Yes, we hear you fine. Okay.
Oh, good.
So you you never did that. You were working under the impression that what you were doing was it was for the American people, right?
For the American people. Kevin, I was very satisfied with the photo interpretation center in Korea. When they had reconnaissance airplanes taking photographs of North Korea and Red China, and we would analyze those while we had image interpreters who would analyze those photographs, and they could tell you a small dot is a T-72 tank. So, therefore, what they were doing was great. But the only thing is, I was kind of disenchanted when I saw the six photographs of the UFOs come in, because I felt our government was suppressing information that should be revealed to the public. And also, another photograph came in and was taken in Vietnam. And on the back of the photograph, it said possible POW, and that was 1981. Later, Special Forces came out and they disclosed some information saying that we did have POWs there after the war.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about that, in my opinion. Okay, now the reason I asked what I asked you about, were you under the impression that you were supposed to be working for the American people or against them? The reason I asked that is because I want people whoever it is that is turning their dark attentions upon Command Sergeant Major James Norton, I want them to hear. I don't expect that this is going to convert any of them, but I want them to hear that no matter what you do, if you're working against the American people, which, if you're violating his constitutional rights, and it certainly sounds as if you already have, if you're doing that and you're working against the American people, you need to understand that right now the light is on you and it's going to stay on you, and sooner or later we are going to take you to Roach Motel. Sooner or later we're going to get rid of the likes of you. We'll do it legally. I'm not talking about some kind of uprising, but I am talking about when America has had enough of being pushed around by snot-nosed bullies like you. We will see to it that you get put in prison. Don't think it can't happen. It's happened before. It can, and it will happen again. Leave him alone. Now, having said that, I'm on all kinds of lists now. There's all kinds of alerts going off. There's probably a special memo going to Janet Napolitano in the morning. But look, this is called being an American citizen. Folks, if you allow fear of these people to bully you down and you cower, they own you. There's only one response, and that is massively stand up and say, hell no. That's the only response that will work with these folks. All right. Now, having said that, Paul, let me get you to comment on what do you think about that?
Absolutely, Kevin. I don't understand why they want to suppress this information. What are they afraid of? Maybe they're afraid that something like Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, when they did the broadcast, people will start panicking. Well, we need to wake up. We need to understand that we aren't alone. And to think that we are alone in this whole universe, that's just very egotistical of us. And to suppress that kind of information from the people, we need to know these things. We need to know that we have these galactic brothers out there. And what are they doing? I mean, you hear all the stories about the abductions and everything else. It seems like we have a problem, and if we do have a problem, we need to work to get that problem solved. So anybody in the military or in the government that has that kind of information, they need to bring it out. And wasn't there a bunch of military men who signed an affidavit that the military knew something about UFOs that came out? And CNN News mentioned it, but it was like it was buried under the rug. So I don't know what's going on.
Well, what's going on is the lamestream news media are controlled. That's what's going on. There's no such thing as free press among lamestream media. It doesn't happen. They are controlled.
And, Kevin, you know something? I witnessed that. When I went to Moscow, Russia, I was watching their news broadcast. And as they were showing the war in Iraq, they were showing soldiers getting shot. That's something that we do not see on our American news. They talk about the communists suppressing information, but it's actually the American public, our American media, that suppresses information from our major networks like CNN News, HLN News, and everything else. I was shocked being in Moscow, Russia, and watching American soldiers get shot. If Americans saw that, they would have a whole different perspective about the war.
Well, you're absolutely right, and of course, the military knows that, and the politicians know it, and that's why they enacted policies to make sure that there was no freedom of the press in reporting this war here in America. This is why, folks, those of you who are in the United States, this is why you hear me say, if you want to know what's really going on with this country, you better get your news from somewhere besides this country. Because you're not getting it here. If you really want to know what's happening, you've got to go outside this country for your news sources, and then you can get a picture of what's really happening here. Now, Paul, what do you think the situation is likely to be? Now, we're speculating, I know that, but let's speculate. What do you think the situation is likely to be at this moment with Command Sergeant Major James Norton?
If he actually got detained by the military would do everything in their power to retrieve that debris. And when they retrieve it, believe me, the public will not know about it. It'll be hidden off in some warehouse after it's been analyzed and shoved away in some carton, and it'll be stamped top secret, above top secret, and we will not have any access to it. That's what's going to happen.
What sort of person, what sort of soldier would follow? I understand when you're in an overseas deployment, you're deployed to some war zone or something, you're expected to follow orders and follow them right now. Okay, I understand that. When you're in the United States, these are the people here that are paying your salary. This is who you work for. And the military code of justice says that you have an absolute obligation to refuse to follow an illegal order. And if you use as your defense, well, I was ordered to do it, but it was illegal, and you followed that order, that's not a defense in your court-martial. Because you have, under the code of military justice, you have an absolute obligation to refuse an illegal order. So here they are in the United States, and somebody orders them to hijack James Norton. That's illegal. If that telephone is his personal property, it is illegal to take it unless you're arresting him and that becomes part of the evidence. But when you arrest him, you have to formally charge him. And there has to then be a trial, which, of course, would be a military trial. But at least then he gets to have a defense attorney as well. Apparently none of that has happened. So it appears that they have violated his constitutional rights right here in the United States of America. Right here in good old USA. Home of the free. Land of the free, home of the brave. Now, if that's the case, aren't they in violation, the very people who carried out those orders to hijack him, to take his property, to intimidate him? Aren't they in violation of the military code of justice provision that says they have to refuse an illegal order?
Kevin, absolutely. But the government is known to do a lot of sneaky things. I mean, we're talking about Watergate and the LSD experiments by the CIA and everything else. They have a great track history of doing illegal things to the American public. So I guess we're almost getting used to it now.
I don't want to get used to it.
I know. I don't either.
What I want to get used to is seeing the jackass politicians that allow this to go on. I want to get used to seeing them go to jail. I want to get used to seeing generals who allow this to go on under them. I want to see them court-martialed.
Right, absolutely. I mean, there's just so many, you know, you told me not, Kevin, are you still there?
No, I left about 10 minutes ago.
Okay. All right. I just had a strange beat. Okay. I know you said not to drop any names, but I'm going to mention Stan Freeman. And Stan Freeman was very... Stan Freeman has talked to a lot of people in regards to UFOs. And Stan Freeman told me he was very, very impressed with Norton. They had like a two-hour conversation. And Stan really, really believed everything he was saying. His story was consistent. There was no contradictions or anything. So Stan was very, very impressed with Norton and was very excited about what the outcome might be. I informed Stan that he was detained, and Stan says, "I'm not surprised, because this is just something that the military or the government is known to do. If he really had that evidence, they're going to do everything to suppress it from the public."
Yeah, one thing they can't do, though, is take away from the minds of people in 143 countries the fact that Norton said that evidence exists. And, you know, if they think, well, we're going to have, a general stand in front of the microphone and say, oh, it's not true, Norton's crazy. If they think that's going to work after they pulled that nonsense about the Phoenix Lights and then that nonsense about the UFO down in Stephenville, Texas, and they got caught in both cases. They got caught with their drawers down and they're hiding in the breeze. If they think we're going to believe anything they tell us now about Norton, they're wrong. It's not going to happen. People believe what Norton said.
Right. And I don't know if you checked it out, but on Norton's Facebook, he actually put up a video that he took at Fort McKellen, Alabama. And the video footage is the most clearest video footage I've ever seen of a triangular-shaped UFO. And he said at Fort McKellen, where he was stationed at, that they were also too involved with UFOs, and I think it was like test driving UFOs. And he actually filmed this UFO, this triangular-shaped UFO, and placed it on his Facebook page. And I went up on his Facebook looking for it again, and I can't seem to find it. Maybe I didn't scroll down further far enough. But it was actually on his Facebook wall, and it's the most incredible footage I've ever seen. And he was ready to reveal the footage that he had, along with the debris that he obtained in 1977.
Now, I know you said, if he has been detained, it's certain that they're going to do everything they can to get their hands on that evidence. That's true. But what is your speculation about his current situation? Do you think he is detained at this point?
Can you say that one more time?
Do you think he is detained at this point, or do you think he's not detained at this point?
Well, if everything that Norton was saying was true, and I believe that he was telling me the truth, I believe that, yeah, he's probably detained right now as we speak.
What do you?
I wouldn't be surprised if they don't have some kind of plow back in his backyard digging up that evidence.
Yeah, but I bet even though he said it was in his backyard, I bet it's not.
Yeah.
I bet that's misdirection. I doubt they're going. They'll dig up the whole backyard, but I doubt they're going to find anything.
Yeah.
I bet he's got it somewhere else. He did not strike me as a person that was very nervous about what they could do to him.
Yeah. Oh, well, he even told me in my conversation with him that he had actually made out a will in case anything were to happen to him. He was prepared for it. And talking to him, and Kevin, you talked to him, and I mean, he doesn't sound like a crazy person. I mean, he's very straightforward. He's very straightforward with his story. He doesn't stumble on his story, you know, like if he was trying to pick up any kind of pieces to make the story accurate. I mean, he was dead on with his story. I mean, it was a very believable story.
Well, let me say something a sidetrack here for a moment about the video of that show that I did with him. It's on YouTube, folks. It's in 8 parts. I recommend that every one of you who have the software for downloading YouTube videos, go download it. Download it, spread it out, share it, send it across the universe. Because there's every possibility that video will disappear from YouTube. So what you need to do is, while it's there, get it and make sure everybody you know gets it. All right. Now, Paul, there's every possibility that he is not detained right now. There's every possibility that he is sitting at home without his cell phone. That's possible. It is also possible that he has been detained, you know. There's another possibility, and I want to explore that with you. There is a possibility that he and this entire episode could be part of a disinformation operation. Now,
Kevin,
we don't.
I thought about that.
We don't want to think about that it could be, but it could be. So, yeah. How do you rate that possibility? Do you think it is, or do you think he's for real?
Well, it's very possible. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was thinking about that. And there was a time, I don't know if I talked to you about it, but I interviewed a guy who claimed he was a former Men in Black. And I said, wow, I got to get this story. And I interviewed him. And one of the things that really, the story got on Coast to Coast AM, because it was a very unique story. And one of the things that he said, he mentioned that there was a underground military / UFO base on this island. And I can't think of the island right now. Out in the Pacific, the South Pacific. Well, a lot of ufologists are very much aware of this island, and they said it's not really public record. It's not something that's really out there for the public to consume. And how he knew that kind of blew them away. And before I knew it, I was getting all these phone calls about this guy and everything else. But their conclusion was that he was a disinformation officer.
Why? Why did they conclude that?
Huh?
Why did they conclude that?
Just some of the interview, they looked at the interview and stuff like that, and it seemed like they were, that he was trying to point me into a different direction. And the ufologist felt that he was out there putting this disinformation out because he knew that I would publish the story and get it out there. So it's very possible that James Norton could be a disinformation officer. I hate to think that, but if it happened to me once, it can happen to me twice.
Yes, and I think it's important, I think it's very important for everyone in the public, people that are listening to the show, to stop and think about this. When you've got a story that's rapidly developing as this one, I mean, it's still happening. This isn't over. This is still developing. There's no way you can reasonably expect that a pretty good disinformation operation can be identified as such this fast. There are disinformation operations that were not identified as such in the past, and they were not identified for a year, 2 years, and then it began to unravel. Okay, so you know, if you expect that we're supposed to be your internet messiah and we're supposed to know this answer, well, you're wasting expects because it doesn't happen that way. Okay? So, you know, we're finding out about this only barely ahead of the audience, aren't we, Paul?
Right.
All right. Exactly. If it were a disinformation operation, if that's the case, who would be running that? I mean, it's involving the Army here. If it was Air Force, it'd be U.S. Air Force OSI Counterintelligence would be running it. Okay, so we're talking about the Army. Who would be running something like that in the Army?
Well, when I was in military intelligence, I worked with Naval Intelligence. I worked with Air Force. We even had Marine Recon over there. So we had all the branches over there. We even worked with the elite troops like Special Forces, Delta Force, 101st Airborne, 82nd Airborne. We worked with them all. So I think it would be a combination of all these military intelligence groups doing the disinformation.
Okay, so it could be any one of them, or it could be several of them working together.
Right, and the overseer, like when the UFO photos came in, it went to the DIA, which is the Defense Intelligence Agency.
Yeah. All right, we have to take a break. We'll pick up with the Defense Intelligence Agency when we come back, folks, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Paul Dale Roberts. And, Paul, you were talking about the UFO photographs that you had that came across your desk when you were with military intelligence, and that I think you said they went to the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency. Is that right?
Correct, the Defense Intelligence Agency. And so those are that's the overseer. And rumor had it from the DIA, it went to the CIA. And from there, it went into a black hole and it disappeared. so the photographs no longer are around or anything like that. But it told me right there that our government was looking into UFOs, even though Project Blue Book closed down in the 60s, we were still looking into the UFO matter.
Did you ever, in that position, working with military intelligence, did you ever see photographs? I know you mentioned a photograph from Vietnam, but it didn't have anything to do with UFOs. Did you ever see photographs from Vietnam that had to do with UFOs?
No.
You know, the reason I ask that is because Brigadier General Brown, when he was Secretary of the Air Force, I believe he was Secretary of the Air Force, he made the statement in a press conference that they had actually had air battles with these UFOs in Vietnam.
I wouldn't doubt it because they had Foo Fighters in World War II, and it seems like UFOs are around every major event that happens with mankind.
Well, almost every major event that happens with mankind is either a natural disaster or a war. And, I mean, major events with mankind, at least with us running the planet, by us, I mean we humans, tend to be major events because there's a whole lot of death involved. And maybe the UFOs are curious as to, you know, they want to watch us and try to figure out why we're so busy killing each other. What do you think?
Right. And, well, here's the funny thing, Kevin, because even like when Columbus came to the New World, in his log, he mentioned that he saw a UFO. And so it seems like every kind of historical event from Charlemagne to Columbus, to 9/11, to the earthquake in Japan, there's some kind of UFO sighting.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. Of course, Columbus finding the New World, we don't think of that as being rather traumatic in terms of the human suffering. However, those people that were already living here probably wonder, how is it he says he discovered this place? We were already here. And it didn't work out too well for them. It was pretty tragic for them when Columbus found them. What followed after Columbus was pretty tragic for the people that were already here. And by the way, when Columbus so-called discovered America, the population of the Americas was in the millions. In the millions, it was already well populated. So, all right, let's come back just
you know,
a little.
Kevin, you actually brought up a good point because look what happened. Okay, after Columbus founded America, we started settling in and everything else. The Indian population started diminishing, and so perhaps our government thinks the same thing, that if they introduce that we do have galactic brothers out there, maybe our population will diminish. You know, it's kind of like the Indians when they face the white man.
Yeah, and that's something Stephen Hawking says. But here's the deal. If it is true that there are extraterrestrials, it's true whether they admit it or not. If they are visiting this planet, if that's the truth, that's going to be the truth whether they admit it or not. And if they don't admit it, whatever's going to happen to our population is still going to happen. And, you know, it's foolishness to think, well, if we stick our head in the sand, or at least stick the public's head in the sand, then none of this will come to pass. What is going to come to pass is going to come to pass. One way or the other, and not admitting the facts as they actually exist doesn't keep it from happening. You know, if you never tell a child that fire is hot, he'll still get burned when he puts his hand in it.
Right.
All right, let's go back to this story with James Norton, because, look, I'm not joking about this. I truly am concerned as to what's happening with him. I don't want to do anything that will cause whatever is happening to be more intense. At the same time, I'm not going to cower and run from the story. The story came to me. The story came to you. I'm not going to run from it. You published it. I broadcast it. And, you know, it's out there now. And I don't feel that I am responsible or that you're responsible for anything that has happened or will happen to Command Sergeant Major Norton, because it's his decision to make this public, and he decided to come to you, and he decided that he wanted to be on my show and tell the story on my show. So it's not a question of do I feel responsible or anything like that. It's not that. It is that I feel concerned that someone who stepped forward and told the truth as he understood the truth, described what he had experienced, I do feel concerned that he may be being subjected to unconstitutional harassment, and maybe worse.
So, I'm very concerned about that too, Kevin. And I know that you asked him many times over, are you sure you want to be on my show? And he was very adamant about it and said yes. And I asked him the same thing. I said, are you sure you want me to publish this article? So he was ready to bring forth this story.
Yeah. Now, it's also true. I mean, you know, we have to look at this from all the possible angles. It's also true that it is possible, and we mentioned this, it's possible that this whole story could be part of a disinformation campaign or a disinformation operation. And if that's the case, then the whole purpose of this is to get us to look at James Norton. Now, that's important for us to understand. If it is disinformation, then the stories of him being detained, the stories of his phone being taken, if this is a disinformation operation, all of that is part of the disinformation operation. Now, there are two things I want to say about that. Number one, if it's disinformation, it's to get us to look that direction. That means we're not looking at something else. What do you suspect the something else could be?
I pondered that, and there's a lot of rumors now and stories, and there's now reports coming out of Colorado of UFOs being seen in Colorado, and a lot of the rumors are that Area 51 moved to Colorado.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't want us to look in that direction. They want us to be confused with something else and think about Fort Benning back in 1977, which we really don't have any evidence of. But they're saying, hey, we do have evidence. Norton says, I have evidence. Then the evidence is suppressed. So maybe diverting our attention to something else so we won't focus on something like Colorado.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Now, here's the second thing I want to say about it. If it is a disinformation operation, that does not mean that Command Sergeant Major Norton knows that it's a disinformation operation. In other words, maybe he really was there in 1977. Maybe everything he's saying is true. And they, if Colorado is the new Area 51, the new UFO base, if that is the case, and there are a lot of news stories coming out about it, which there are, and they want us to look away, maybe it's one of those deals where they say, okay, we're going to trade you 1977 for Colorado. So here's the information on 77, and we're going to harass him a little bit so everybody will know that what he's saying really is true. Okay? And you will all go running to 1977 and not be looking at Colorado. It could work that right. way, too.
In the worst-case scenario, would be the fact that he's out for publicity. But talking with James Norton, he doesn't sound like that kind of guy. And why would you want to make up a story like that and then later on have it debunked and you're embarrassed in the national media? You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's probably something in the Code of Military Justice that would handle doing something like that. There's probably some offense he could be charged with if he did do this just as a publicity stunt and then was debunked and embarrassed nationally. So there could be some actionable things in the code. In other words, there's probably something he could be charged with and be court-martialed if he did that. So I don't think that's the case. Plus, he wasn't trying to sell us a book. He wasn't selling us a DVD. He wasn't selling us a movie. He wasn't making any money off of this. So I don't think it's the publicity stunt.
No, I don't either. And Kevin, you've been in the military.
No, I wasn't. I was international police.
Oh yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even in that situation, when you're in that type of situation, that type of organization, you're brainwashed not to disclose information to the public that the public doesn't have any business knowing about.
That's correct.
And it's a need-to-know type situation. And like when I saw the six photographs that came in that day from the unit, in the back of my mind, I wanted to go ahead and make a copy of one of the photographs, but I didn't do it. I was too afraid, too scared. And James Norton didn't sound like he was scared. He sounded like he was just tired of the BS. And he wanted to bring out this information. And it seems like he had this information for, well, since 1977. And he finally, I guess it was just eating at him like a cancer, and he wanted to bring it out. So I just, you know, the whole thing just baffles me.
Well, when we look at this, the possibilities are that everything he's told us is true, and he was detained and perhaps is detained now. That's a possibility. Another possibility is it's a disinformation operation, and he knows it. And another possibility is it's a disinformation operation, and he is not aware that he was being used in it. We'll talk about all those when we come back. We have to step away for break. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Paul Dale Roberts. We're talking about this amazing case of Command Sergeant Major James Norton and giving you the behind the scenes, behind the story, behind the story, as we experienced it in developing this story to the point that it became an article and it became a broadcast here at the Kevin Smith Show. Paul, you had some. We're on final approach. We just have a few minutes left, but you had something you wanted to share with us.
Oh, sure. Also, too, there was a Paul Niler, I believe that's the name. but he's supposed to be a Freedom of Information guru. And he put out a Freedom of Information request to Fort Benning, Georgia, to a general who's running the base for any kind of information on what happened on September 1977. And he actually posted that on his website, and it was placed on the Anomalous News. So he's got that information out there. And also, too, I just want to mention, too, Kevin, like yourself, you're a former police officer. You know, when you were talking to James Norton, his story was very consistent. It was precise. I just talked, when James Norton's story came out, this guy contacted me and he said he was on a, he worked on a missile silo and it was taken over by aliens. Well, as I talked with the guy, his story, had a lot of contradictions and everything else, and he became very defensive in our conversation. And I wind up hanging up on him because his story didn't make any sense. But he was trying to put the story out, and it sounded like BS. James Norton caught my attention, and that's why I put that story out there, because it was a very good story, and it was very consistent. And it just made a lot of sense. And did you feel the same way, Kevin?
Yeah. And, you know, I did not get the sense from him that he was being deceptive. There were questions that I asked, even on the air, where he said, I don't know. You know, I wasn't at that part of it. I didn't see that part of it. So there were questions that I asked him in our private conversation, and then a couple of times on the air where he didn't have an answer. Now, a made-up story... people feel nervous if they don't have the answer, so they make something up on the spot. If it really happened to you, you know what you know, and you know what you don't know. And so you tell what you know, and if somebody asks something that you don't know, you're not nervous about saying, I don't know, I didn't see that. Because that's your real story. If you're making a story up, and I ask something you don't know, one of the things that comes to your mind is maybe if I really was there, I should know, and maybe he knows. So I better make something up. Well, Norton didn't do that. Norton, when he didn't know, he told me that he didn't know. And, you know, overall, I have to say, I think that he was being honest. He was being truthful about what he said. And if not, then he's one of the most skillful at deception that I've ever run into. And I've run into a lot. I've interviewed a whole bunch of people, not just in this show, but I've interviewed people as suspects, and then I've interviewed them as people that had been arrested who were really good at deception. I've interviewed a bunch of them. That doesn't mean I can't be fooled. But it means it's pretty hard to fool me. And I think he was being honest.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin, being in the business, and I am, as a paranormal investigator, I run into a lot of people. And I have people who tell me they're werewolves. They tell me they're vampires. They all kinds of stories that are just really, you know, just mind-boggling. And their stories, you can tell they're fabrications.
Yeah.
And I'll listen to them and everything else, and basically they're kind of like wasting my time. Sometimes I'll get their story out there anyway and let the readers make their own decision. And usually the readers come back to me and tell me that's a BS story. And that's what I thought originally.
Mm-hmm.
And so when James Norton was telling me that story, I mean, I was glued to every single word. It was comparing that to the story about the missile silo where the aliens were taking it over. I knew right off that was a BS story. And like I said, the guy became very defensive. James Norton, I hit him up with all kinds of questions, and never once was he defensive in his statement. you know, he was just right on the mark.
Yeah, that's what I experienced. Well, and I think it's important. See, we don't know for sure. I think the story is true, but we don't know for sure. It could be, and I mentioned this, it could be a true story and still be a part of a disinformation or misdirection campaign to get our attention away from something else. For instance, as you said, Colorado. Okay, it could be that. We don't know all of the parameters yet. And to the audience, let me say again, you're finding out almost as immediately as we're finding out. We're only finding out information just barely before we're bringing it to you. Okay? And so this is a fast-developing story. And we don't know yet which way it's going to run. But if it is a real story, and if he really is being harassed and detained and maybe other things happening to him, we don't know. If that's really going on, yeah, they can do it in the privacy of a base. They can do it in the privacy and secrecy of an interrogation room underground somewhere. Yeah, you can do that. But you can't do what you're doing without us turning lights on. And remember, we own you. Remember that. The American people own you. And maybe you get away with it for a little while, but it adds fuel to the fire, and it adds to the breaking point where Americans say, you know what, enough's enough. So keep that in mind.
Kevin, I got to mention one more thing.
Yeah.
It is also, too, a known fact that there was a major UFO flap on the East Coast at the military bases in the 70s. And in 1977, Fort Benning, that's the East Coast. And then that's when myself and two other soldiers in 1974 at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, we saw six UFOs in formation. So there was a huge UFO flap going on the East Coast, which I was unaware of till actually recently. This ufologist put the information out that there was a major UFO flap during the 70s on the East Coast, and they were around military bases.
Well, there you go. You know, the story that comes to us from John Vasquez and from Command Sergeant Major James Norton really sounds almost like it's a science fiction movie. But then again, folks, if it's true, it's just true. And remember, a lot of your science fiction movies are based on things that actually did happen, and the government never told you about it. But they get leaked into the science fiction plots. Well, Paul, I want to thank you for stepping in and pinch hitting this evening. It's been fascinating, and I appreciate you so much for, on spur of the moment, saying, yeah, I'll do it.
Kevin, I love your show. Kevin, I love your show, so I don't mind.
Okay, Paul, if you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment as I bring this one in for a landing. Folks, don't forget, my book, God's in the Garden, is available as an ebook right now for $9. It's going to be available till Saturday, and then it's going to go off of the site again, and it may not be available for a very long time. So get your hands on it. If you want it, it's there. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. Hey, you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.